Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 22nd, 2022, weekend edition. Local job rate rebounds from COVID by Mella McEwen. Labor markets in Midland and Odessa displayed a significant recovery from the impact of the COVID pandemic as 2021 came to a close. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday that employment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes Midland and Martin counties, fell to 4.1% in December from 4.4% in November. The rate is well below the 8% posted in December 2020. Odessa showed similar improvement, falling to 5.9% from 6.3% in November and coming in well below the 11.6% Odessa recorded in December 2020. "We're trending in the right direction," said Willie Taylor, chief executive officer. "We're definitely making progress." Speaking with the Reporter Telegram, Taylor estimated the first-time claims for unemployment insurance had fallen to about 979 in the 17 West Texas counties. At 4.1% unemployment, he said Midland is considered at having full employment, and he said it seems to be a job seeker's market. Taylor said his office has funding to help those wanting to find a job but need help with child care, and he urged that those seeking jobs or seeking better jobs to take advantage of the training opportunities at local colleges. With such a tight labor market, not only locally but statewide, even nationally, Taylor predicted it will be competitive all over the state. "As we navigate ourselves through this virus, the region is looking good." According to the Workforce Commission, Midland had a civilian labor force of 101,000, down just slightly in November, but more than 2,200 higher than the 98,700 in December 2020. Still, Taylor pointed out that is below the Midland seeing pre-pandemic, and he said it will take time to return to those levels. The number of employed grew about 200. That's 6,000 more than the 90,000 employed in the previous December. There were 4,000 unemployed Midlanders in December, 300 fewer than November, and 3,700 fewer than those that unemployed last December. Midland added 300 jobs from November to December for a non-farm job count of 100,000. The gain was led by the trade, transportation, and utility sector with 200 new jobs. The mining, logging, construction, and education and health services sector each added 100 jobs. The government sector was the only sector to lose jobs. For the 12 months from December 2020 to 2021, Midland has added 6,200 jobs for a job growth of 6%. Midland's dominant industry sector, mining, logging, construction, which includes oil and gas industry, added 3,400 new jobs. The financial activities sector added 300. Statewide, the unemployment rate fell to 5% in November. Texas reported a record high employment level for a second consecutive month. Amarillo and Austin and Round Rock each reported the state's lowest unemployment at 2.9%. Church program broadens outreach by Stuart Doreen. Stonegate Fellowship leaders are attempting to connect with Midlanders in their 20s and 30s for a different type of worship and ministry. The plan is to start a Porch Live location in downtown Midland beginning Tuesday. The Porch is a program that started with a church in Dallas called Watermark. Every Tuesday, thousands gather in Dallas and even more at our live stream locations around the country, according to the website, theporch.live. Lives are changing, friendships are forming, and many are finding hope they never had before. Through messages, music, and relationships, and with other young adults, our goal is to walk alongside you through the highs and lows of adulting. From talks about dating, relationships, anxiety, and more, we are learning what it looks like to live a life full of purpose. Stonegate Fellowship leader said Midland will be the 14th location to join the live stream, and they want young professionals in the city, no matter their church preference, to come along. And in this case, they'll meet the 20 and 30-somethings in professional setting. The second-story co-working space, 2223 West Wall Street, above Cancun Grill. Doors will open at 7, said Chase Gilbert, the student pastor at Stonegate. The service begins at 7:15. We see this being a citywide thing and wanted to capitalize with the push toward downtown with Centennial Park. We see the city very intentionally making downtown the place to be. We want to take advantage of that and use it. So after work, get dinner, stay downtown, and go to the porch. We want it to be the place to be for that age demographic. Gilbert talked about the younger men and women who are making Midland their homes. The porch will help identify those issues that young singles face, including the culture struggle. The porch also provides a ministry opportunity for those young adults that haven't connected with a more traditional church institution. Single or married, the porch should be a place to gather and help navigate life's ups and downs and to love and serve Jesus. They know their target audience, Gilbert said. They'll speak about things that a 20- or 30-year-old would face. Now it's a matter of getting the word out. Gilbert said they attracted more than 100 followers in their first full week on Instagram and have expectations of about 50 to 60 who are interested. We want there to be excitement across the city. We want this to be a citywide thing, not a Stonegate thing. Gilbert added that moments happen with younger age groups, and those movements create people who emerge as the next leaders. We will see God use this and raise future leaders to lead our city and state. Woman-owned liquor store opens with customer service at the forefront, by J.C. Lewis. Cowboy Spirits opened in December. Owners and longtime friends Dana Howery and Olvido Ramirez embarked on the journey after wanting to become owners and honor the memory of a loved one. Howery has been in the alcohol sales business for the last 2.5 years, and Ramirez has been her friend for 20. Our logo is a cowboy with angel wings and halo. The logo was the first thing I thought about. It was kind of a tribute to my father-in-law and Olvido's late husband, who passed away from COVID. Howery said her father-in-law, Jose Luis Ramirez, grew up breaking horses, so she thought a cowboy would be a nice tribute to his legacy. When I picture him, I picture a cowboy, she said. That's what he did at his family's ranch growing up, which is why I wanted to do a cowboy theme with angels. Ramirez said she has been excited about the new chapter in life. Howery added that they have worked hard to add personal touches to the store. The store has black chandeliers for lighting and a rustic wood countertop. My goal was to go for a rustic, shabby chic. Everybody loves the chandeliers. I feel like you couldn't walk into another liquor store like this. Ramirez added they work to have great customer service. You can't go to many places anymore and get good customer service, Howery said. When you come in here, you'll most likely be greeted by me. You can expect a greeting and assistance for any questions. The store is also on favor, so customer can have their liquor needs delivered. Hours of operation are from 10 to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Hyacinth will remain closed for the month of January. The store will be taking inventory, reorganizing, restyling, and rebooting for the new year, according to an Instagram post. The design team will continue to work on current design projects. The shop will reopen February 1st. Wedding gifts can be purchased by visiting their website or calling the shop during business hours. Author Amy Weatherly will have a meet and greet at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday at Low Street Books for her new book, I'll Be There. There will be food trucks and discounts at surrounding businesses during the event. Aerotex Aviation is offering a Valentine's Day special. The aviation business will be offering a 45-minute flight with champagne or sparkling cider and chocolate-covered strawberries for $249. To make reservations, call 432-363-4816. Change is coming to MidKIF's I-20 exits. The $36 million project that is rebuilding the Interstate 20 interchange at Midkiff Road in Midland will see a major traffic change next week. During the week of January 24th, all four I-20 entrance and exit ramps adjacent to Midkiff Road will be closed to allow the contractor to start building main lane detours needed before demolition of the existing overpass. Westbound ramps will be affected beginning Tuesday. Eastbound ramp closures will begin Thursday. These ramps will remain closed for several months. Motorists will need to plan for alternate routes. During this time, there also will be nighttime main lane closures. The outside lanes in both directions will be temporarily closed to place concrete barriers. In the interest of safety, motorists are reminded that patience and obeying speed limits is of paramount importance when driving in this construction zone. The Midkiff project is adjacent to a project that is building a new intersection at I-20 and County Road 1250. The two projects will effectively have a combined construction work zone stretching from Farm to Market Road 1788 to a quarter of a mile east of Midkiff Road. During construction, speed limits are reduced on both projects. The Midland Road project is scheduled to be completed in the winter of 2023. James Construction Group of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, it won the Midkiff Overpass project with a low bid. Drilling for crude slumps after 13 weeks, by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity continued to inch higher on the continued strength of commodity prices. Oilfield Services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count gained 3 rigs, rising to 604. That were active across the nation last January. For the first time in 13 weeks, however, drilling for crude slumped as the number of rigs seeking oil fell by 1 to 491. Oil drilling was slightly undercut by the 6-week slump in oil prices from late October to early December. Natural gas drilling, however, got a boost as there were 113 rigs drilling for the fuel, 4 more than the previous week. Texas dropped 1 rig for 280 at work statewide. Louisiana, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Utah were the only producing states to see gains this week. Wyoming joined Texas as the other producing state to see a decline. Like Texas, the Permian Basin dropped 1 rig to have 291 at work region-wide. The rig count is 104 more than the 188 the previous January. Midland County reported 30 rigs at work within county lines for a third week. King County reported no activity this week as its one rig ceased activity. What's that going to be on I-20 and La Mesa Road? An apartment complex is coming to Southeast Midland. Fuse 432 is being constructed near Interstate 20 and La Mesa Road. It will offer studio, 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, or 3-bedroom apartments to rent when completed. Plans are for 342 modular units. Other apartment complexes in the area include Playa del Pueblo, Palladium, Midland, The Azure, Constellation Ranch, and Compass Point. Ginger Brown passed away on January 17th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Thursday, January 27th at Golf Course Road Church of Christ in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Homer Sonny Olson Jr. of San Antone passed away on January 14th. A service celebrating Homer's life will be held at Coker United Methodist Church in San Antone on Wednesday, January 26th at 11 a.m. Burial will follow in Coker Cemetery. Justin Chestnut passed away on January 17th. The family will receive guests from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, January 23rd at Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home. Memorial service will be held at 4 p.m. Monday at Nellie Pickleham Welsh. Leia Anna Renovetti Ellis passed away on January 18th. A celebration of life will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Saturday, January 22nd at noon. Mary Socorro Salazar passed away on January 19th. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, January 25th at Holy Trinity Parish. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. A rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Monday, January 24th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Myra Brown Robinson passed away on January 16th. A memorial service will be held Monday, January 24th at 2 p.m. in the sanctuary of Highland Park Presbyterian Church in Dallas. A second service will be held on Monday, January 31st at 2 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Big Spring. Pete Joe Henderson passed away on January 19th. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, January 25th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Services will be at 2 p.m. Wednesday, January 26th at the funeral home. Robert Ralph Truett Sr. passed away last week. His ashes will be placed in the Pioneer Cemetery on the ranch in a private family service. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the charity of your choice. Timothy Lynn Fiesel passed away on December 24th. A celebration of life was held on Sunday, December 26th. The family wants to thank everyone who reached out or helped over the years. Annie Wright of Midland passed away on January 20th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, January 28th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 29th at Ideal Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Beverly Sue Fields passed away on Wednesday, January 19th. Services are pending. Arrangements are made with Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Mary Jo Clendenin passed away on January the 19th. There are no services scheduled at this time. Judas Earl Price passed away on January 13th. There are no services scheduled. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, January 22nd. Landgraf wants another term. Four-term legislator touts work on border security and highway funding. Seeking his fifth two-year term, State Representative Brooks Landgraf is emphasizing Texas-Mexico border security and his West Texas origins as he aims to help end the state's reliance on the Robin Hood funding system and standardized testing in the schools in next year's legislative session. He had raised over $100,000 by year end and had almost $244,000 in cash on hand. Representing the 81st Legislative District in Austin, Landgraf says last year's statewide redistricting deleted Andrews County and added Loving County to the district, which also includes Ector, Winkler, and Ward counties, although the winner of the March 1st Republican primary will keep representing Andrews through the rest of this year. I'm very proud of the work I've done representing Odessa and West Texas in general, and I will be talking about my record and the work we need to continue doing. The attorney said, we invested $2.9 billion in border security at the state level because the Biden administration has been derelict in its duties there. We in the state also have to do what we can to fix our electric grid and continue to kill the Green New Deal proposals that would be very harmful to the oil and gas industry. Asked what has gone badly for him during the past 2 years, Landgraf said his biggest disappointment has been his inability to end standardized testing and the Robin Hood system in which money is taken from well-funded schools and given to poorer ones. Robin Hood has put an unacceptable burden on teachers and students here in the Permian Basin, and I will fight to take away our reliance on standardized testing as the main measure of accountability for the public schools. Along with helping to bolster border security, Landgraf said he has been gratified as chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee to squash numerous Green New Deal-related bills and to back highway funding. Before I took office in 2015, the state's average annual transportation infrastructure spending in the basin was $51 million. And during the 3 years since I was appointed to the Transportation Committee, it has averaged $361 million a year, he said. Landgraf says his West Texas roots have helped him as a legislator. I'm proud to be from a West Texas ranching family that has been here for five generations, Landgraf said. So I'm from Odessa. I'm really of West Texas. I know the values that we are raised to have and the honest approach to life that we have. I have West Texas in my veins, and I'm proud to take the values that West Texas has given me to serve the people of West Texas. Notwithstanding the brickbats that come with life and politics, Landgraf said his fighting spirit motivates him to continue. I still have that passion in my belly to serve, and candidly, I've become a very effective legislator based on my ability to get things done and have used those abilities for the good of people of West Texas, he said. I've been visiting with hundreds of West Texans on their doorsteps in the last few weeks, and they have continued to give me ideas and inspire me to keep serving them. They have placed their trust in me to be their representative, and I feel that connection, and the people more than ever have. There is still more work to be done, and I'm willing to continue serving them as long as they are willing to bring me back. This is Jane reading from the Saturday, January 22nd, Odessa American. Gray has April bail jumping court date. Casey Gray, who is challenging four-term incumbent State Representative Brooks Landgraf in the March 1st Republican primary, has raised $63,000 in the first campaign filing, with almost a third of it coming from a loan to himself. Gray refused a traditional interview or phone or person interview with the Odessa American, saying he would be misquoted. He said his message is already resounding with voters and did answer a few emailed questions. He launched into attacks against Landgraf and asked if his opponent had given questions to the OA, which he had not. Gray's Tuesday night campaign finance report to the Texas Ethics Commission, or the TEC, showed him with a total of $63,000 in loans and contributions, including $10,000 each from Odessa businessman Dick Salisbury and Ashley Wall of Houston. Gray loaned himself $20,000, according to the report. Besides the Salisbury donation, Gray received about $11,000 in donations from his home district, with the rest coming out of district. He is listed as his own treasurer on the required filing. He did not fill out the expenditure section of the filing other than declaring $750 in not itemized expenses. He has sent out several mailers, has campaign signs throughout Odessa, and has opened a campaign office. In Gray's first filing to the TEC in the state rep race, he did not report paying rent for his campaign office at 113 West 9th Street and bristled when asked via email if he was paying rent or if Ector County Republican Party treasurer Jeff Russell had offered him the office rent-free. Gray demanded to know if Landgraf told the OA to ask the question and wrote, "I am renting it for a great deal from Two Way Partners Limited." Russell is listed as a director or partner in Two Way on state filings. Asked in an email about his occupation, the almost 40-year-old Gray wrote, "retired military." When he was running for Congress in 2020, Gray said he was born in Odessa and attended elementary and middle school here before moving to Bangs near Brownwood, where he graduated from high school. A Federal Election Commission spokesperson said Gray did not file a report for his 2020 11th congressional district race, apparently because he did not raise the minimum $5,000. He filed in 2016 to run as a Republican in Democratic Representative Adam Schiff's 28th congressional district in California, but was not on the ballot. Asked why he was not on that ballot, Gray wrote, It was an exploratory bid. Garnering 4,000 voters in the Republican primary 2 years ago, Gray was defeated by now Congressman August Pfluger. He finished the primary behind fellow candidates Brandon Batch, Wesley Verdell, Jamie Berry Hill, J. Ross Lacey, and J.D. Faircloth, but received more votes than candidates Robert Tucker, Ned Luscombe, and Gene Barber. Legal issues. Gray has an April court date in Wofford County, Wisconsin, on a charge of bail jumping. The prosecutor in the case said this week that Gray is accused of violating a restraining order twice and jumping bail on the two cases that were filed as a result of those alleged violations. Online records also indicate Gray is involved in a child custody dispute in that same county. Court records also indicate the January 6th status hearing was held on the violate harassment restraining order charge that was originally filed in February of 2018. Gray entered a not guilty plea in May of 2018. Gray on Friday would not comment when reached by phone and asked for questions to be emailed to him. This is Jane reading from the Saturday, January 22nd, Odessa American. In Odessa, on January 19th, 2022, Donna Lynn Hodge joined her Lord and Savior in heaven after a long fight with cancer. She is preceded in death by her beloved sister Vicki K. Jordan, her loving husband Gene Hodge, her parents Don and Doris Jordan, her children Sandra Jordan and Philip Hodge, and her five grandchildren. Services were held on Saturday, January 22nd. And Goldsmith, Mary Jo Clendenden, 76, died on Thursday, January 20th, 2022, in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. In Midland, Judas Earl Price, 44, died on Thursday, January 13th, 2022, in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is Michael, beginning the readings from the front page of the Odessa American, published Sunday, January 23rd, 2022. County Votes Tuesday on Consulting Firm by Kim Smith. The Ector County Commissioner's Court is scheduled to choose a consulting firm Tuesday to help them spend $32 million in funding from the American Rescue Plan Act. The county commissioners voted 5-0 in September to hire a firm to vet applications and conduct audits before moving forward on any requests. County Judge Debbie Hayes has said without the firm, the county risks the possibility of spending money that doesn't qualify under ARPA's 400 pages of guidelines and taxpayers having to pay it back. On Saturday, Hayes again defended the court's decision. The way she looks at it, the county has two choices. It can spend $250,000 to $275,000 annually for the next 4 years to hire additional county staff to vet the applications and conduct audits, or it can spend that amount or less to hire a firm that actually has experience dealing with natural disasters and the federal treasury. People don't realize just how few employees work in the county's purchasing and auditing departments and are responsible for handling the county's $85 million annual budget, Hayes said. They also don't understand how much of a burden the $32 million in ARPA funding would be on those employees. In addition, Hayes said that the county is under a deadline to allocate the ARPA funding and doesn't have the time it would take to hire additional county staff to allocate those funds. She pointed out the county hasn't been able to fill its human resource director position in nearly a year. At least six firms submitted bids for the ARPA funding job, and a committee appointed by the county has whittled them down to one, Hayes said. Once one is approved by the court, the purchasing department will negotiate the terms of their contract, and it will likely be up for a vote at the court's next meeting, she said. Hayes came under attack for the court's decision to hire a firm during a recent Lions Club event. Medical Center Hospital asked for $7 million in ARPA funding, and Odessa Regional Medical Center requested $2.6 million. Hayes's opponent in March's Republican primary, Dustin Fawcett, said that by delaying the distribution of funds, the county missed a December 31st deadline that would have allowed FEMA to reimburse 100% of the funding. Fawcett said he was embarrassed and saddened by the court's decision. Why do we have elected officials if we're going to hire people to tell us how to spend our own money? I have an issue with that, Fawcett said. Losing out on that money was inexcusable, Fawcett said, noting how many counties had already determined how they were going to spend the funds months ago. President Joe Biden extended the December 31st deadline to April 1st back in November, Hayes said. During the Lions Club event, Hayes assured members the hospitals would be at the top of the list of recipients, but during a September commissioners meeting, she questioned whether either hospital needed the funds. I'm not saying that I'm for or against giving funds to the hospitals, Hayes said. The hospitals have surely done much good and have been heroes. But at some point, through the normal process, the question has to be asked, how much money do you need? Last week, Hayes said it's the county's job to get them whatever it is they need. The hospitals have always been at the top of my list. I've never not been for helping the hospitals. Hayes said she never wants to be compared to Nancy Pelosi and comments she made about the Affordable Care Act. Back in March 2010, the then Speaker of the House said, "But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what's in it," at the legislative conference for the National Association of Counties. The commissioners are also scheduled to discuss game room regulations on Tuesday. Last week, the Odessa City Council instructed City Attorney Natasha Brooks to send a letter to Hayes, County Attorney Lee McClendon, and all of the county commissioners, asking them for their input on proposed game room ordinances and giving them a February 15th deadline. The council hopes to join forces with commissioners to help address the proliferation of game rooms throughout the county and the corresponding problems some of them are causing local law enforcement. The city would like to restrict such establishments to light industrial or heavy industrial zones and restrict their hours of operation to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 a.m. to midnight Friday through Saturday. They'd also like to make sure they are located at least 1,000 feet away from other gaming establishments, churches, schools, healthcare facilities, public buildings, or residential areas. The city wants the county's help because Brooks told the council that under state law, only counties can enforce a 1,000-foot rule, not cities. The commissioners are also scheduled to accept a $20,000 donation from Occidental Petroleum Corporation for the Ector County Sheriff's Office and discuss developing cemetery plots at the Ector County Cemetery.
This article is entitled Weapons Agreement on City Agenda from OA News at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council will vote Tuesday night on whether to enter a 10-year, $7 million agreement with Axon, a Scottsdale, Arizona-based company that develops technology and weapons for law enforcement agencies and the military. Last week, Odessa Police Department Deputy Chief Matt Davidson and Corporal Ian Kapitz told council members during a workshop that the company will provide OPD with the latest technology possible, including tasers, body-worn cameras, helmet cameras, dash cams, and drones. The company would also provide training and records management and evidence management systems. Those systems would also improve the department's ability to share records and evidence with the courts. Davidson and Kapitz said some of the contract could be paid for with seized assets, but were hesitant to throw out any figures because it varies from year to year. However, they noted the contract would lock in the costs for the next 10 years, costs that are guaranteed to go up every year, and the department would be spending money on the equipment and software anyway. The council will also consider signing a $356,797 contract with Onyx General Contractors to improve drainage, handicap access, and sidewalks at 10 intersections, including those at Penbrook Street and Bonham Avenue, Dixie Boulevard and Walnut Avenue, and Peabar Ranch Road and King Ranch. Consider accepting a $20,000 donation to Odessa Fire Rescue from the Occidental Petroleum Company and $10,000 to OFR from Chevron. OFR Chief John Alvarez said the $20,000 would go toward hazard materials training and technical rescue training, and the $10,000 would be used as needed. Consider giving an $82,900 contract to Crafro of Chandler for 5 years' worth of crack sealing compound. The compound is enough to cover 16 miles of roads. This article is entitled MPO Reports Fewer Fatalities from OA News at oaoa.com. A series of projects through Ector and Midland counties resulted in a 23% drop in fatal accidents along several roadways from 2019 to 2021, according to a study by the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization. According to a news release from MPO Chairman Debbie Hayes, the study showed there was nearly a 31% drop in accidents overall during the same time frame. Over the past couple of years, the MPO has dedicated funding to projects in both counties and portions of Martin County, including those involving Loops 250 and 338, State Highway 191, and Interstate 20. Traffic signals have been added. Loop 338 at 52nd/56th Street was regraded and reoriented. Safety barricades were added along State Highway 191, Business 20, I-20, and Loop 250, according to the news release. The MPO believes the conversion of the frontage roads along Loop 338 from two-way to one-way will also reduce crashes and save lives along the I-20 corridor. And additional projects are planned at the interchanges on Loop 250 at County Road 1150/County Road 60, Loop 338 at US 385 in North Odessa, and Loop 338 at East Yukon. For further information, visit www.permian-basinmpo.com.
This is Mackie. Today is Monday, January 24th, 2022. I will be reading from the Odessa American. Three Odessans Want JP4 Spot by Michael Bauer. With Justice of the Peace Precinct 4, Eddie Spivey, retiring Ector County voters in that district will choose one of three candidates running in this year's Democrat primary in March. It will be a winner-take-all as there are no Republicans running. With three candidates, there is a possibility of a runoff, with the top two candidates following the primary should no one get more than 50% of the vote. All three candidates running have not held an elected office in the past. Those running include Master Peace Officer Elizabeth Beza, 54, Intertech PSI Lab Technician Alfred Littleton, 77, and Auto Oasis Owner Jesse Porras, 65. Beza. Beza, who grew up in Odessa, attended Permian High School before moving to Sandia View Academy High School in Corrales, New Mexico. It wasn't long before she returned to Odessa and graduated from the Odessa College Law Enforcement Academy. She currently holds a Master Peace Officer Certificate and an Instructor Certificate through TCOL. She has been an instructor at both the Odessa Police Department Law Enforcement Academy and the Odessa College Law Enforcement Academy for the last 19 years. This is her first time running for a public office, and she says running for the Justice of the Peace position has been something that she's always had in the back of her mind. "I've been wanting to do this for years," Beza said. "I just didn't think I was ready at the time. In talking to the Justice of the Peace, and particularly in my precinct, I would always talk to Spivey, and so I've wanted to follow suit and continue his legacy. It's always been a dream that I would want to serve my community in that position." Beza talked about the importance of communication in the JP position. "I think that's what makes the world go round, and it's no different in the position that I'm seeking," Beza said. "My goal is to keep my office as transparent as I can. With proper training, plus the training that I've had, I think the communication part will be taken care of." She has been employed with the Ector County Sheriff's Office for more than 24 years and currently holds the position of sergeant in the civil, warrants, and mental health divisions. "I have loved every minute of it," Beza said. "Working in the civil department, it's opened up a side of law enforcement that goes hand in hand with the position that I'm running for." While she hasn't held an elected position, she feels that being well-versed on the Texas rules of civil procedures, as well as working with the community, sets her apart from the other two candidates. "I have worked for an elected office for so long, which has, therefore, given me the opportunity to work with a community one-on-one, so that's always been a passion of mine to work with people, and I already have that," Beza said. "Again, together with the education that I've received over the years, that separates me from the other two candidates." Porras. Porras, who ran for the JP Precinct 4 position 4 years ago, returns to make another attempt. He has lived in Odessa for most of his life, including the past 38 years, at his current residence. Porras attended Odessa High before joining the United States Marine Corps and serving from 1974 to 1981. He graduated from Kawasaki High School in Japan in 1975. Porras said that there are a multitude of reasons that he is interested in the position, including the importance of being active in the community. "Being a part of the community when I was growing up, my parents and uncles were a part of the community," Porras said. "One of my uncles did one of the first parades here in Odessa. When I was growing up, all of my dad's relatives were a part of the community, and that stayed with me. I would see and be a part of the parades that my dad built." He discussed how he plans on applying his community work in the past to the position. "I'm going to be fair," Porras said. "I'm going to be someone they can trust, someone they can talk to. This is why I apply myself to doing this, because I think that doing this and what I've done for the community, they'll feel at ease with me and asking questions. I try to be fair with everyone. I've had volunteers who help me with one thing and volunteers help me with other things. People will feel like I'm for everyone. I pledge myself to help everyone individually. If you have a problem, let me hear it and I'll understand it." Just like with Beza, Porras talked about the importance of communicating. "It is very important because this is how they feel more of where they can depend on your trust," Porras said. "If you don't have communication with them, they will feel like this guy will only do it when he needs something, and that's not my character. I'm always trying to give to the community, and I'm always trying to do something better for the community. If it's doing a parade or doing something for the veterans or something for the community where they see me out there applying myself for the people, they'll feel more confidence when they have an issue." Communication is something everyone wants. If you don't communicate, people won't know who you are and won't feel that they can talk to you and feel good about their situation. Porras said he wants his voters to see him as someone they can have confidence in. When they go to the court, they can come out with a good feeling that justice was done and what was done was right, whether they lost a case or won, Pora said. That everything was done properly. I have to communicate with both parties and have an understanding if they feel that it wasn't done right or that I didn't judge them right, to let me know so that we can have an understanding. We'll communicate. Your voice is your vote. He said having worked on organized events is something that separates him from his opponents. Right now, I have nothing bad about my candidates. Boris said, I know both of them. They're good people. The only thing that I can say is that myself, not that I've done it, but one thing that I have done that I feel that they haven't reached is done a variety of organized events for the community, being a part of the community and being involved with the community. Even though I have my own business, I'm not closing my doors to anybody. I have my business and still do. This is something that I feel that the community knows that I have no problem in being there or being a part of what we need to get things moving for the community. Littleton. Littleton is also no stranger in Odessa. Having grown up in the Permian Basin, he graduated from Blackshear High School as valedictorian and attended the University of Texas at Austin. Littleton spent over 35 years in Dallas as the owner of Littleton Inspection Services. He has since sold the business and moved back to Odessa, where he has been for the last 11 years. Currently, he is employed by Intertech PSI as a lab technician, a position that he has had for the past 2.5 years. While Littleton has not held an elected position, he talked about his life experiences. I want my voters to know that I have a pile of experience, Littleton said. I have life experiences. I've been discriminated against. I know what it's like to be discriminated against. Here, around Odessa, I have a feeling that I can really help somebody, and I think I can be fair and equal. It's a broad spectrum as far as what the justice of the peace does. I would say, of the three of us, we're all on equal ground as far as coming into the office. Littleton says he has served on planning and zoning commissions in the past. I have some idea of what it's like to be in that environment and have people make decisions regarding certain things, Littleton said. I've had to make a lot of important decisions in my life. Some of them were pretty tough. Having two parties come together and be the mediator, you have to look at the test results and it'll tell you who's right. Someone's going to be upset, and it's the concept that I get about being a justice of the peace. A lot of things that you do sometimes has to do with stuff like that. I think I'm up to the task. My life experiences have made me ready for the next task. He talked about the challenge of running for Justice of the Peace Precinct 4 and what drew him to want to take it on. I thought about it for a little bit, and I thought about what I'm going to be doing with my life, and it seemed like it came at a right time in my life, Littleton said. It's another challenge in my life. It's a challenge that I know I'm qualified for. I've always had challenges in life. Stepping in fate and starving for 4 years and starting my own business, and then all of a sudden, things come together. The last day to register to vote is January 31st. Early voting begins February 14th and ends February 25th. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 34,047 total cases, 601 deaths. Midland County, 33,860 total cases, 431 deaths. Texas, 5,905,609 total cases, 78,055 deaths. U.S. cases, 70,206,220 total confirmed and 862,494 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested if no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Docs Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road, or 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR tests and rapid antigen tests available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket cost. No appointments needed. However, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results via text message. To pre-register, visit DocsHealthTesting.com or text DocsTX to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the Docs Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Free COVID-19 testing. Community Wellness America is hosting free COVID-19 testing for ages 5 and older throughout January. Testing schedule is as follows. Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Ector County Department of Health, 221 North Texas Avenue. Sundays, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Mondays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. All participants are asked to wear a mask. Citizenship is not required. Vaccination status is not a requirement. For more information, call 432-349-0522 or visit communitywellnessamerica.org. Quick Hits Neighborhood Watch Program Meeting. The Odessa Police Department has scheduled a Neighborhood Watch Program meeting from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday at the OPD Classroom, 205 North Grant Avenue. The program was designed to keep citizens informed of activities occurring in their neighborhoods by forming watch groups within their neighborhoods. It's a neighbor helping neighbor program that has assisted in reducing crime within our community. This program is an alliance between the citizens of Odessa and law enforcement. Citizens become the extra set of eyes and ears for law enforcement reporting suspicious activity to police, along with working together to resolve problem areas. For more information, call OPD Corporal Steve Lesauer at 432-335-3361 or Corporal Michael Hamilton at 432-335-3322. Staff reports. Tom Segura, I'm Coming Everywhere World Tour. Actor, comedian, writer, podcast host Tom Segura will bring his I'm Coming Everywhere World Tour at 7 p.m. Wednesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788, Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or more information, go to wagnernoel.com. Read to Felix. The Ector County Library Children's Department has scheduled Read to Felix at 4 p.m. Thursdays at Third Floor Auditorium at the Library, 321 West 5th Street. Felix is a therapy dog that loves to be read to. Visit tinyurl.com/2p94nvdp. Waterworks Receptions. A two-part reception for Waterworks will take place Thursday from 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. at the University of Texas Permian Basin Nancy Fife Cardozier Gallery, and from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Ellen Noel Art Museum. An artist talk is scheduled at 7 p.m. at the museum. Selected works will be displayed at both the Cardozier Gallery and at the museum through April 24th. UTPB will also be hosting the exhibition Water Ways on loan from the Smithsonian Institution's Museum on Main Street program. Visit noelartmuseum.org.
Woman ready to dress down her sister in a family dust-up. Dear Abby, I'm one of three sisters. My mother passed away more than 10 years ago. My middle sister has my mom's wedding dress and says mom gave it to her. My daughter is now engaged. I asked my sister to mail me the dress, or when I visit, I can carry it back myself so that my daughter can try it on. We live in the U.S. My sister lives in Canada. My daughter would not alter it in any way. She would just like to take a photograph in it and have a special moment with it. My sister has refused. Is this right? It feels like such an ugly, selfish decision. She has three daughters and wants it for them, which I can understand. But how does my daughter trying it on take away from that? I'm having a hard time with this, and I would like to know your thoughts. How can I take the high road, but let her know she took the low road and I'm disappointed in her? I don't think she has the corner on the market for caring about our mother just because she got married before I did and has the dress. Signed, Drama About the Dress. Dear Drama, if you want to take the high road, omit any geographic reference to her refusal. Just say that you and your daughter are very disappointed by her reaction, and had the situation been reversed, you would have been more generous. You might also consider visiting your sister and bringing your daughter with you if your sister agrees, so she can try on the dress there. I wish you luck. Dear Abby, my husband and I are friends with another couple we enjoy very much. We live about an hour apart, so we don't see them as often as we'd like. When we do make plans, Laura almost always invites along her sister and her husband. While they are a nice couple, we would sometimes prefer it just to be the four of us. We are spending the winter in another state and have invited them to come for a visit. Laura is already hinting around about wanting to invite her sister and husband. How do I politely handle this? Sound, Crowded in the East. Dear Crowded, handle this by politely telling Laura that you and your husband would prefer it just be a foursome this time, and perhaps another time you can include her sister. Period. Dear Abby, I've wanted to be a pilot for a long time, but because of my medical history and my need to be on medicine, both of which are disqualifying, it's not possible. I've been good at handwriting comparisons as a hobby, specifically in legal cases, although I am unpaid. Also, I may get a job as a mail clerk at a federal department. How can I move past this major disappointment where I'm grounded job-wise for life? I pray and have given free psychic readings. I'd like to find love, but I've struggled with emotional regulation. Please help. Signed, All Over the Place. Dear Olive, your first order of business needs to be finding a job you can enjoy other than flying. Once that's done and you are on firm financial footing, explore those hobbies of yours. Rewarding relationships are based on mutual interests. Between your job and your hobbies, you may meet someone with whom you can have a romantic relationship.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.